Recently, we agreed to give our youngest son an allowance. The problem is, we never actually had any cash, and so he would do his chores, and we just wouldn't have anything to give him. That's when we started to use Acorns Early. Acorns Early is the smart debit card and money app that grows kids' money skills as they grow up. You can start with the in-app chores tracker and teach your kids the value of a dollar. Then, you let your kids set their own savings goals and start building healthy money habits early. Kids even get their very own customizable debit card, giving them that extra sense of independence. Plus, with Acorn Early spending limits and real-time spend notifications, parents always stay in control. It's truly the easiest way to, one, give your kids an allowance, and two, teach them financial literacy without making it boring. Ready to teach your kids the smart way to earn, save, and spend? Get your first month on us when you head to acornsearly.com/ATTWG or download the Acorns Early app. That's 1 month free when you sign up at acornsearly.com/ATTWG.
Acorns Early Card is issued by Community Federal Savings Bank, member FDIC, pursuant to license by MasterCard International. Free trial for new subscribers only. Subscription fee starting from $5 per month unless canceled. Terms apply at acorns.com/early terms.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply, in-app only.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
On March 30th, 2010, 31-year-old Jacob Cavanaugh spent the evening playing a casual round of frisbee golf with a friend in Traverse City, Michigan. When the game wrapped up, Jacob's friend invited him to hang out at a local park, but he declined, saying that he had homework to do for his college classes. He dropped the friend off and said he was heading home to his mom's house where he lived. But that was the last time anyone in Michigan would see Jacob Cavanaugh. In the coming days, puzzling clues emerged, suggesting that instead of driving home, Jacob had driven over 1,200 miles south instead. By the end of that week, Jacob had vanished without a trace, leaving behind a mystifying trail that stretched from Michigan to Texas and a family who doesn't believe he would have left them willingly. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell the stories of those who never came home. Today, I want to tell you the story of Jacob Cavanaugh. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back.
Thank you for joining us once again. I'm Kona.
And I'm Ethan.
And we're the husband and wife team behind this podcast. Each week, I tell you the story of an unsolved missing persons case. Ethan doesn't know anything about the case going into the episode and is here to provide his reactions and questions in real time, hopefully asking some of the same ones you have at home. Now, this week's story does involve a man driving a car. But unlike many of the others we've covered, he doesn't get into a car accident before his disappearance. In fact, this case has several hallmarks of someone who did actually decide to leave and start a new life.
Did they find his car randomly on the side of the road or in a ditch?
Not exactly.
The doors open and everything's still inside?
Not exactly, no. But there are parts of the story, including the car, that don't exactly add up. So it's a baffling case and one that I had never heard of prior, you know, to starting to look into it for this episode. So I'm glad we're able to bring it more attention. But before we dive into Jacob's story, we want to take a moment to thank our amazing Patreon supporters. So thank you to Doogie, Vanessa L., Victoria G., and Opinionated Bird. Thank you so much for your support.
Thank you all so much.
If you want to join them, you can head over to our Patreon and join at any level, starting at just $2 a month for ad-free episodes and a free copy of the ebook that I wrote. So now with that out of the way, let's get into the disappearance of Jacob Cavanaugh. Jacob Cavanaugh was born on October 6, 1978 in Traverse City, Michigan, to Mavis Klaus. Jacob was the seventh of 10 kids.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Wow. 10 kids?
10. And his siblings say that he was the joker of the group. Tall and skinny and often with a shaved head, his sister Sarah Brown says that he reminded her of Jack Skellington from A Nightmare Before Christmas. Jacob and his family are members of the Ottawa and Chippewa tribes. In high school, Jake was mechanically inclined and started to work toward becoming an auto mechanic. Even though he was the little brother, he was ready to jump right into adulthood. After graduation, he got a job at Dave's Garage and married his girlfriend, Rachel, who he had been with since middle school.
Wow, really?
Yeah. The pair quickly had two sons, Jacob Jr. and Xander, about 3 years apart. Things were good for a while, but in 2008, after 10 years, Jake and Rachel's marriage fell apart. The two remained friendly, however, and were both devoted parents. Jake's father hadn't really been around as he was growing up, so he was determined to do better by his sons. By 2010, Jake was 31 years old. He'd become a member of the Michigan National Guard, and he was attending Northwestern Michigan College to earn a mechanics certification while still working full-time. The hard work paid off, though, and he was due to graduate in April. He was in a new relationship, too, and had talked about buying a house for himself, his kids, and his girlfriend. Because you remember, he was staying with his mom at the time.
Right, yeah.
His life was busy, and he had plenty of plans for the future. Those close to Jacob describe him as a loving father and a reliable person who wasn't one for reckless behavior or disappearing acts. His sister, Sandra, later said that it was extremely unlike him to just drop out of contact. He adored his kids and was excited about what lay ahead in his life. And this makes what happened at the end of March 2010 all the more confusing. On March 31st, Jacob spent the day around Traverse City, Michigan. In the afternoon or early evening, he met up with a friend, Gary Wittig, to play disc golf at Hickory Hills, a popular local course. Jake was an avid disc golfer and shared that passion with his sons, so it wasn't unusual for him to unwind with the game after work or class. That evening, as the sun set, Gary invited him to hang out at the open space, which is a park area on the Traverse City waterfront. Jake declined, explaining that he had homework he needed to catch up on. He was diligent about his studies, partly due to a commitment that he had with the National Guard to maintain his coursework. Jake dropped Gary off at the park around 9 p.m., but he never arrived home that night. By the next morning, April 1st, 2010, his mother realized that something was wrong. He hadn't come home the night before and hadn't been in touch, so she called around looking for him. When she called Dave's Garage, she learned that Jacob hadn't shown up for a shift that day. This was an immediate red flag. Jake being a no-call, no-show was completely out of character. Mavis and the rest of Jake's family called him repeatedly, but their calls just went to voicemail. After a full day of silence, Jake's mother reported him missing to the Grand Traverse Sheriff's Department, which went about as well as you would expect.
He's an adult. He's free to do what he wants.
Yeah.
We're not going to investigate this as a missing persons case because he'll just come back.
Yeah, according to the episode of Unsolved Mysteries about Jake's disappearance, the sheriffs told Mavis that because he was an adult, he would have to be missing for a week.
A week?
Before they'd open a case.
Wow, I've never heard that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's worse than what we usually hear. Usually yeah. It's like 48 or 72 hours.
Yeah.
But a week.
That's insane.
Yeah. Jake and his mom must have had a connected or a joint bank account, which turned out to be extremely helpful, because the next day, Mavis received an alert that a $40 ATM withdrawal had been declined on Jake's account due to insufficient funds.
Okay.
Now, this was great news in a way, because it made it seem as though Jake was still out there and doing okay, relatively speaking. However, it was also weird. One, Jake never let his balance get that low, but more importantly, the ATM wasn't in Traverse City. It wasn't even in Michigan. It was in Ardmore, Oklahoma, nearly 1,200 miles south of where Jake had last been seen.
So it's either Jake going south or somebody has his ATM card, but would also have to have his PIN. And do we know, was she able to look and see if there were any other withdrawals, that maybe that's the reason why the account was drained?
Yeah, so I think at that point, she was able to get in and take a look at bank statements. But I don't have the details of what she found. So this was April 2nd that she got this notification, and Jake had last been seen around 9 p.m. on March 31st. So it was physically possible for him to have made the drive in that time.
Right.
But the drive itself was like a 17, 18-hour drive, give or take. That's the Google Map time. Like, that's not including stops and everything. So there really wouldn't have been a whole lot of time for, like, sleep or, you know, anything like that at that point. But, you know, back to your question of, you know, whether it's him with the ATM card or if it's somebody who just has his card, it's not out of the realm of possibility that it is him.
Right. Yeah.
But at that point, they just don't know. So armed with this new information, Mavis went to the Michigan State Police and tried to report her son missing again. State Police took her seriously and called the sheriffs, who finally opened a case on April 4th.
That's weird that it's almost like an older brother scolding a little brother, like, do the right thing.
Yeah.
It's weird that they listened also.
Yeah. But it still seems like it took a day or two, you know? Yeah. But now that the investigation was finally underway, investigators would soon discover the bizarre sequence of events that had been unfolding over the past several days. This is a paid advertisement from BetterHelp. We've all done it before. We've turned to our barista, our hairdresser, or, you know, a random stranger in the bathroom and asked for life advice. And while all of that does have its place, when you're looking for help about relationships, anxiety, or other clinical issues, they might not have all the right answers. Instead, why not try talking to a credentialed therapist online with BetterHelp? BetterHelp has been helping people find their match for over 10 years. And their therapists work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the U.S. BetterHelp does the initial matching work for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. All you have to do is fill out a short questionnaire to identify your needs and preferences, and their 10-plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means that they will typically get it right the first time. But if you aren't happy with your match, you can switch to a different therapist at any time. Plus, this is so convenient. It's completely online, so you can use your subscription whenever you need to. As the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a diverse variety of expertise. And as a special offer, our listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/ATTWG. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ATTWG. Find the one with BetterHelp. I work from home, so it drives me crazy when my house is a mess, but I don't really have the time or the mental energy to keep it looking as clean as I want. That's why I'm so glad that HomeAglow exists. They're a top-rated home service platform that's dedicated to making your space clean and tidy. And what I love is their flexibility and how easy it is to use. They have online booking capabilities that allow you to instantly schedule a cleaner in your area for a special occasion, party, or for regular cleanings. Cleaners pass a rigorous certification process and maintain a 4.8-star average platform rating. It's a fantastic way to support cleaners in your community, and 100% of cleaning fees and tips go directly to your cleaner. To schedule a cleaning, you simply go to HomeAglow's website to choose the day and time you're looking for and the duration of your cleaning to match with the cleaner. The best part is their Forever Clean membership, which saves you $30 an hour on all future cleanings. You can book unlimited cleanings starting at $19 an hour, back by HomeAglow's happiness guarantee. Take home cleaning off your plate this fall by using HomeAglow. Head to homeaglow.com/ATTWG to get your first 3 hours of cleaning for only $19. That's HomeAglow.com/ATTWG. Are you planning a trip abroad this year? Imagine how much better your travel experience could be if you could speak the language. With Rosetta Stone, you'll gain the confidence to have real conversations and create deeper connections wherever you go. Rosetta Stone is the trusted leader in language learning for over 30 years. Their immersive, intuitive method helps you naturally absorb and retain your new language on desktop or mobile, whenever and wherever it fits your schedule. One of my favorite places to visit is Spain, and as it turns out, my 3 years of high school Spanish does not quite cut it over there. And that's what's great about Rosetta Stone. You can learn faster and retain longer. They immerse you in your new language naturally, which helps you think and communicate with confidence. There are no English translations, so you truly learn to speak, listen, and think in your chosen language. So don't wait. Unlock your language learning potential now. And Then They Were Gone listeners can grab Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for life. Visit rosettastone.com/today to get started and claim your 50% off today. Don't miss out. Go to rosettastone.com/today and start learning today. As the Grand Traverse County Sheriff's Office began investigating Jacob's disappearance, they uncovered a baffling timeline of his movements in the 48 hours after he was last seen in Michigan. It seemed as though Jake had embarked on an unplanned road trip across multiple states for reasons that nobody could fathom. Evidence from surveillance cameras, credit card transactions, and cell phone records allowed investigators to piece together Jake's route. All right, so this is the timeline.
All right, let's go.
Not long after dropping off his friend, Jake stopped at a gas station in Traverse City to fill up his tank. This suggests that he was preparing for a drive. Then he headed south out of town. Around midnight, continuing southward, Jake passed through Buckley and reached Cadillac, Michigan, around 30 miles from Traverse City. Now, that's interesting because that was like around midnight and it's only 30 miles and he apparently dropped Gary off at like 9.
Oh, so what was he doing?
I don't know.
Maybe buying supplies? No, we would have had.
Yeah, there doesn't. At least the police haven't said anything about there being any indication on any of his credit cards or anything that he bought supplies of any kind other than, you know, filling up his tank.
And do we have any surveillance footage of him at the gas station?
So there is some surveillance footage involved in this.
We just don't know where it is, per se.
No, we do. So there wasn't at this first stop, but in Cadillac, Jacob's bank card was used to withdraw $140 cash from the ATM. Now, there were not security videos capturing that ATM transaction, but since the card was used and no issues were reported at the scene, investigators assume that it was indeed Jacob who made the withdrawal. And you'll understand why as I get more into
it. Okay. I was going to say, like, that doesn't indicate anything.
Yeah. But this $140 would be the only known cash that he grabbed for the journey. In the early hours of April 1st, Jacob's silver 2002 Chevy Malibu was seen on surveillance video at a Speedway gas station in Mattawan, Michigan. Now, Mattawan is near Kalamazoo in the southwestern part of the state, roughly 170 miles from Traverse City. At 2:04 a.m., video shows Jacob himself purchasing gas at a Speedway gas station. Now, this confirmed that Jacob was on the road heading out of Michigan in the middle of the night.
And was he by himself?
He appeared to be, yeah.
Okay.
And so that's why they assume that the first stop was him, because they have him later on camera. Then, more than 12 hours after the Mattawan stop, Jacob's cell phone pinged off a tower near Springfield, Missouri. Now, this was an astonishing development because Springfield is about 600 miles southwest of Mattawan. The timing suggests that Jacob drove through the morning and early afternoon of April 1st, cutting through Illinois and likely part of Missouri without significant stops. At least there weren't any that left evidence. By around 2:30 p.m. on April 1st, his phone was in southwestern Missouri. Now, for context, driving from Traverse City to Springfield is roughly a 10-plus-hour trip.
And he did it overnight.
Yeah. Then, just after midnight on April 2nd, police in Hollister, Missouri, ran the license plate of a silver Chevy Malibu that turned out to be Jacob's car. Hollister is just south of Branson, Missouri, near the Arkansas state line. It's unclear why the plate was run. It was possibly a routine check on a parked car or a minor traffic stop, but we do know that no arrest was made. This indicated that Jacob, or at least his car, had continued about 40 more miles south from Springfield, and he was still on the move late at night. A few hours later, at 3:35 a.m., deputies with the Washington County Sheriff's Office in Arkansas encountered Jacob's vehicle at a rest area in West Fork. West Fork is just south of Fayetteville in northwest Arkansas. According to the police report, deputies found Jacob asleep in his car at the rest stop and ran his plates to check on the vehicle. The deputies noted nothing alarming. He just seemed like a tired traveler who had pulled over to catch some sleep. They didn't detain him since he wasn't officially listed as missing yet and no warrants were on the vehicle. And while this does seem like a missed opportunity, this sighting was before Jake's family had even attempted to report him missing. So even if the sheriff's office had immediately taken them seriously, these deputies wouldn't have any reason to have been concerned about Jake. Right. So there, nothing would have happened regardless.
Right.
The 3:35 a.m. April 2nd contact in West Fork is crucial, though, because it's the last confirmed sighting of Jacob Cavanaugh alive. At this point, he was roughly 800 miles from Traverse City. His long, strange journey had already taken him through at least four states in about 24 hours. Sometime later that day, Jacob, or someone using his bank card, continued traveling from Arkansas into Oklahoma. There was an attempt to use Jacob's ATM card in Ardmore, Oklahoma, which was declined, and this is the alert that Mavis had received. Ardmore is in southern Oklahoma along I-35, not far from the Texas border. Now, what we don't know, because there's no camera footage, is whether or not Jacob was still the one using the card at this point.
I mean, I feel like we have to assume that it was.
Yeah, I mean, there's no, at that point, real reason to think that it wasn't. We just can't be sure.
Yeah.
About 2 hours after the Ardmore incident, at 1:26 p.m., Jacob's credit card was successfully used for a purchase at an ExxonMobil gas station in Fort Worth, Texas. Now, Fort Worth is about 140 miles south of Ardmore, and this suggests that Jacob, or at least his car and wallet, kept moving south into Texas and paid for gas. Later that same afternoon, at 4:49 p.m., Jacob's card was used again at a convenience store in Sweetwater, Texas. The store is noted as Skinny's, which was a local 7-Eleven gas station in Sweetwater. Now, Sweetwater is over 300 miles west of Fort Worth along I-20 in West Texas. And this is a significant detail because the only person Jake knew in Texas was his brother, who was stationed at Fort Hood. But this card activity shows a sharp turn westward away from the area where his brother was.
Yeah, I mean, like, where is he going?
Yeah, like nobody has any clue. Like, he doesn't know anybody on this route whatsoever. Now, here's where it gets even weirder, though. The gas station in Sweetwater did have surveillance video, and while a Chevy Malibu can be seen pulling in around the time Jake's credit card was used, Jake's family isn't sure that the man who gets out of it is him. While the person was skinny and, you know, like roughly had the same build as Jake, he was wearing different clothes than the ones Jake was last seen in. He also appeared to be shorter than Jake, who was about 6 feet tall.
Hmm. Do we think that's because of poor surveillance footage?
It very well could be. The one thing that his mom pointed out is that I guess the guy in this surveillance footage is wearing cargo shorts. And she's like, Jake would never wear cargo shorts. Like, he thought they looked messy.
While I agree with that statement, you know, it is possible that one of the things he purchased at a gas station was clothes because he didn't have any clean clothes.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine there's a wide selection of clothes or choices at gas stations.
Right. And that's true. And just because we have these stops listed on the timeline doesn't mean that they are the only stops. Because he did have $140 in cash.
Right. Yeah.
He could have stopped somewhere else and gotten clothes as well, you know? Because you're right. I mean, at that point, he probably would have wanted to change. Because from what I understand, the clothes that he was in were his work clothes. So, you know, it makes sense that he'd want to just grab something else.
Yeah. I'm sure they're not very comfortable.
Yeah.
And at this point in the trip, they're probably not smelling too great either.
Exactly. But yeah, all we do know really is that he didn't use like a credit card to buy clothes or, you know, anything like that. But like I said, it doesn't mean that he couldn't have stopped somewhere. Now, by this last stop, Jacob's car had traveled roughly 1,200 miles from Michigan all the way to West Texas. This purchase at Sweetwater was the last known trace of Jacob Cavanaugh's presence that investigators have found. After that point, all activity stopped. There were no more credit card charges, no more cell phone pings, nothing. When authorities finally connected these dots, they were stunned. Jacob's family and friends were left asking why. Why would a man with deep roots in his community and an upcoming graduation take off on an unannounced 1,200-mile road trip? Detective Jason Polzin of the Grand Traverse County Sheriff's Office has been one of the investigators working the case, and he described the timeline after March 31st as, quote, truly puzzling, end quote. From the outside, it almost looked like Jake was on some urgent mission, yet no one knew of anything urgent in Jake's life that would prompt such a journey. He didn't mention a thing to anyone, and he didn't take extra clothes, a toothbrush, or even a phone charger with him. By the first week of April 2010, when Michigan authorities learned of Jacob's credit card trail, it was too late. Jacob was gone. Neither he nor his car could be located in Texas. There were no subsequent sightings reported of him, no broken down vehicle found on the highway, nothing. It was just as if Jacob had vanished into the West Texas desert after April 2nd. April 2nd was that last sighting, and so the case wasn't even officially opened until the 4th.
I mean, where could he have gone?
Authorities in Michigan reached out to law enforcement in the states along Jacob's route, and eventually the FBI joined the search, adding Jacob Cavanaugh to their VICAT missing persons database. The case had now crossed many state lines, and there were serious concerns for Jacob's safety given the mysterious and abrupt end to his trail. For Jacob's family back in Michigan, the news was devastating and confounding. One day, he was playing disc golf with a friend, and a few days later, they learned that he had been seen sleeping at an Arkansas rest stop, and then there was nothing. Captain Clark told reporters, quote, "We can't explain why, after a disc golf game at Hickory Hills, Jacob went on an unplanned trip," end quote. It simply made no sense. Despite multiple agencies now working on the case, no further clues emerged. They didn't find anyone who knew Jacob's plans, and there were no further sightings of either him or his car. And so eventually, the case went cold. Jacob's family, of course, held out hope for answers, but as time passed, hope for finding him alive began to dim. Did you know that a single finger prick at home can give you over 180 personalized insights into how to improve your health and slow your aging? If you've been listening to this show for a while, you know that I tried the True Age and True Health test by True Diagnostic, and it showed me things I never learned from my regular physicals. True Health looks at over 105 biomarkers tied to your nutritional, metabolic, immune, and cognitive health. You'll see your vitamin levels, your nutrient balance, inflammation, gut health, and more. True Age measures 75 plus biomarkers to reveal your biological age, your pace of aging, and the age of key organ systems. It doesn't just give you a single number, it shows how your heart, brain, liver, and immune system are all aging. Together, the combo gives you a complete picture of your health today, along with personalized recommendations to improve your health and slow down aging. For me, it really inspired me to work on my cardiovascular health. It's so hard to get answers at the doctor's office, so I loved getting this report that had so much information on it. If you're serious about living healthier and longer, visit truediagnostic.com and use my code ATTWG for 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's truediagnostic.com, code ATTWG for 20% off. Your future self will thank you. Ever noticed how many unnecessary chemicals are in your cleaning products? When I started looking into what I was actually using around my home, I realized that my laundry detergent might just be the worst offender. So many popular brands are packed with harsh chemicals that can irritate your skin, mess up your hormones, and cause allergic reactions. So instead of continuing to use those dye-filled pods, I switched to Earth Breeze. Their detergent actually comes in sheets that are free from harsh chemicals like optical brighteners, dyes, parabens, phosphates, and preservatives. It also doesn't come in those plastic jugs. It's just a lightweight, pre-measured sheet that dissolves in the wash and gets the job done. And yes, your clothes still come out clean, fresh, and soft. I feel so much better knowing that I'm not exposing myself and my family to those unnecessary toxins. So if you're looking for a powerful clean without the harsh chemicals, try Earth Breeze. It's easy to switch, and if you're not completely satisfied, they have an amazing money-back guarantee. And right now, you can try Earth Breeze for up to 40% off plus 4 free gifts at earthbreeze.com/ATTWG. That's earthbreeze.com/ATTWG for 40% off plus 4 free gifts. Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's revolutionizing how we deal with life's challenges, from sleepless nights to stress-filled days. Mood.com has created an entire line of functional gummies that target specific health concerns with 100% federally legal THC blends, and they'll deliver them discreetly right to your doorstep. Even better, you can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code ATTWG. We've been advertising Mood for a while. They've been really good to us. And after trying some of their gummies, it is wild how different each one feels. Those sleepy time gummies will knock you out in about 15 minutes flat. No hangovers, no grogginess. What makes these different is how they've paired THC and other cannabinoids with herbs and adaptogens. You're not going to find gummies like this in a dispensary or anywhere for that matter. They've got immune support, menopause relief, PMS, mental clarity, sexual arousal, and all of them use federally legal cannabis. And it's all grown on small family-owned American farms. And they can ship to most states in the U.S. And best of all, not only does Mood stand behind everything with an industry-leading 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code ATTWG. So head to Mood.com and remember, use promo code ATTWG at checkout to save 20% on your first order. In 2015, 5 years after he went missing, Jacob Cavanaugh was legally declared dead by the state of Michigan. Now, this, of course, didn't mean that his family had given up, because having someone declared dead is simply a procedural step that families sometimes take after a long disappearance to settle legal matters like insurance or child custody. And again, so he was in the National Guard, so I'm assuming there were some benefits that his family probably might have been able to get after he was declared dead. And then again, with child custody, you know, I'm sure it made it a lot easier for his ex-wife to just have full custody at that point. But then 2 years later, in 2017, a potentially significant break in the case emerged, but it wasn't a good one. Investigators received information that Jacob's car may have been located in a scrapyard in Mexico.
I was going to ask how far his last sighting was from Mexico.
So it looks like Sweetwater, Texas is roughly 230 miles or so from the Mexican border, or about a 4-hour drive. So he wasn't super far, but I mean, he wasn't exactly on the border either.
Right, but that could have been one tank of gas that could have gotten him to Mexico.
Oh, for sure, yeah. So the way that they found this, though, was that The VIN on Jacob's Chevy Malibu showed up in records associated with a scrap operation in Mexico. So this suggested that at some point after April 2010, Jacob's car was taken across the U.S.-Mexico border and was likely dismantled or destroyed. This scrapyard clue is perhaps the biggest indication of foul play in Jake's case. If Jake had simply had a car accident or wandered off somewhere in Texas, we would have expected the car to have been found in that area.
Right.
Instead, its VIN turning up in Mexico raises the possibility that the car was stolen and taken over the border, possibly to conceal a crime. It could also be that the car was abandoned and then stolen and taken over the border just for normal car stealing reasons.
It could also mean that he went to Mexico and sold the car for money.
Yeah, and that is part of one of the theories, too, that we'll get into. So even though this was like a really tantalizing lead, it didn't answer the central questions, which are what happened to Jacob himself. Was he alive when his car went to Mexico, or was the car taken after he was harmed? If criminals were involved, who were they and where did they encounter Jake? Because again, like, he made a big portion of this trip seemingly fine, you know?
Right. Which is why I find that hard to believe, that he makes this trip that's completely crazy and nobody knows why he's doing it.
Yeah.
And then while he's doing this crazy trip, then he encounters criminals and foul play.
Mm-hmm.
I don't buy it. I think he went to Mexico. Why? I have no idea.
And so, yeah, of course, we don't know for sure that Jake met with foul play or that he left on his own. But over the years, a number of theories have been put forward, one of which, of course, is that Jacob might have chosen to walk away from his life. Perhaps, some speculated, he was overwhelmed by responsibilities or personal issues and decided to start fresh somewhere far from Michigan. And that does make sense to an extent. There were several sightings of Jacob in which he was alone and apparently fine, like we were just saying. However, Jacob's family strongly doubts this scenario. All evidence about Jacob's mindset points in the opposite direction. He was actively planning for his future at home in terms of career and housing. He was devoted to his children, and he had stable relationships. There were no signs of secret troubles like a gambling debt, criminal ties, or anything that often precedes a voluntary disappearance. Moreover, he left all of his personal belongings behind. And so, you know, you've got to think if one were planning to start a new life, you'd expect them to at least pack, withdraw lots of cash, or take a passport, especially if Mexico was in the plans. But Jake did none of these things. Though, as we know, we have seen cases of voluntary disappearances in which these things were not done.
Right.
But not taking his passport does indicate to me that Mexico wasn't necessarily in the plan. Because, like, I'm not saying it would have been impossible for him to cross the border without a passport, but
It'd be pretty difficult.
Yeah, because this is 2010.
Yeah.
So, like, in a post-9/11 world, like, it is difficult.
Yeah, I mean, unless he bribed the border guard, but, I mean, what, $140?
Yeah.
I mean, probably not.
Well, yeah, and this is a guy who grew up and stayed in the same town for his entire life.
Yeah.
Like, what does he know about going down to Mexico and bribing border guards? And you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
That part of it does seem a little bit far-fetched to me.
I would agree.
In 2024, Jake's youngest son, Xander, spoke to his local ABC affiliate about his complicated feelings toward his father and his disappearance, saying, quote, "If he is still alive and out there, then I wish he wasn't. I don't know how to explain it because I'd rather him be dead and gone than to have spent all these years knowing that we're still out here and just not caring. Or, you know, I'd like to think of him as better than that, if that makes any sense," end quote. And yeah, like, I get where he's coming from. And I don't know exactly how old Xander was at this time. I think he was around like 18 or 19 when he said this. And I get that. I mean, because you don't want to think that your father would just walk off and abandon you and your brother.
Yeah, totally.
With no warning, you know,
yeah,
and for seemingly no reason.
Yeah. I mean, it's depressing to think about that, but
yeah.
it it makes sense.
Well, ultimately, Xander said that he doesn't believe his father simply abandoned everyone. But, of course, he can't be sure and said, quote, you never 100% know anything, end quote. Investigators have also considered that maybe Jacob did set out intentionally on a trip, but during that trip, he encountered danger. So perhaps he was going to visit someone or pursue an opportunity in another state. Under this theory, the journey itself was voluntary up to a point, but then Jacob crossed paths with the wrong person. This could mean that he picked up a hitchhiker, met a stranger at a gas station, or was carjacked by criminals. Stolen vehicles, especially older models like a 2002 Malibu, are sometimes taken to chop shops or scrap yards, and the proximity of Texas to the Mexican border makes it relatively easy for car thieves to smuggle vehicles south. It's conceivable that somewhere around the last fuel stop in Sweetwater, Jacob was attacked or killed, and the perpetrator or perpetrators took his car, drove it across the border, and sold it for scrap. Under this scenario, Jacob's remains could be in some remote area of West Texas or discarded along the way, which is why they haven't been found.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense, but it as a possibility, but it still just doesn't answer the question of why he was on the trip in the first place. Like, where was he going? What was he doing? Again, I go back to, you know, we have evidence that he was on this trip voluntarily.
Right.
And then while he's on this very random trip that's completely unexpected and out of the blue, he gets murdered. Like, it just seems very, I don't know, unrealistic to me.
Well, so his family does have a theory about this, and they put this forward in that Unsolved Mysteries podcast and elsewhere. And so they think that Jake might have gone on this trip for money. So he had reportedly been worried about money. You know, he was living with his mom. I'm sure he was paying child support. He was living paycheck to paycheck, going to school in the National Guard. And he was seemingly looking into other career options, including nursing. He did seem to be like in a transitional place in terms of his career, right? And money was an issue. So could someone have offered him a chance to make some easy money? In this theory, someone could have offered Jake money to maybe transport drugs. Since he didn't grab his passport, it's unlikely that the plan was for him to take them across the border into Mexico, but his journey south could have meant that he was perhaps responsible for the first leg of the trip, and that maybe the plan was for him to meet up with somebody in Texas, make the exchange, do whatever, and then that person would take the drugs into Mexico or wherever they were going. But then something happened along the way. Either he made it all the way to Sweetwater, where his trail went cold, or something happened earlier and someone else did have his car and wallet for a time before dumping them, leading to the car ending up in that scrapyard. The idea that Gary Wittig, the friend who last saw Jake in Michigan, knows more than he said has been floating around. Now, this partially comes from the fact that he actually disappeared around the same time as Jake, though he resurfaced a few days later. So basically, apparently, like, nobody could get a hold of Gary around the time that Jake went missing either. But he showed up a couple days later, people asked where he was, and he said that after Jake dropped him off on March 31st, he met a few girls at a bar and ended up partying with them in a hotel room. During this, his phone died, which is why he didn't answer calls or texts.
For several days?
I think for like, yeah, 2 days, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah. So I don't know exactly when he showed back up. I'm thinking it was, yeah, April 1st or April 2nd. So this is interesting timing, but there hasn't been any evidence that Gary was involved with whatever Jake had going on that night. And police have never named him or anyone else as a person of interest in Jake's disappearance. Over the years, the Grand Traverse County Sheriff's Office has continued to periodically revisit Jake's case. In 2022, detectives conducted a fresh round of interviews with people connected to the case, family, friends, and any potential witnesses who may have recalled something new. Detective Polzian remarked that with time passing, some individuals might be more willing to talk now than they were in 2010. He also mentioned that there were, quote, discrepancies in their stories, end quote, that have caught investigators' attention. Now, this suggests that either memories have shifted or someone wasn't entirely truthful initially. Now, of course, he didn't publicly name who these individuals were with the discrepancies in their story, but it implies that investigators suspect that someone does know more than they've said about Jacob's disappearance. Personally, I think the drug angle makes sense. Like, that's what I'm leaning toward more than he went to Mexico and started a new life.
But, I mean, does he have any history of drug use, involvement in drugs, anything like that that we know of?
So nothing that I've ever read has said that he was ever involved in drugs. I looked up his criminal record. Nothing drug-related came up. The only thing that did come up, actually, was kind of interesting. It was right after he turned 18. He was actually arrested for second-degree home invasion and larceny in a building. So he pleaded guilty to this and ended up serving, I can't see how much time in jail, but he was on probation for a little while as well. But like I said, that was right after he turned 18, and he had never had any other trouble after that. And he was 31 when all of this happened.
Yeah, so we have no known drug history or affiliation. He's in the National Guard. It's not like he's affiliated with gangs or anything like that. I mean, I get the theory of desperation for money, but who would have pitched that to him? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I get it.
I mean, maybe Gary.
Yeah, maybe.
You know?
Maybe.
Who did disappear for a couple of days as well. Like, maybe they, you know, were kind of working together on this, and then Gary came back and Jake didn't.
Yeah, I mean, maybe.
You know, I don't know. I don't want to, like, drag Gary's name through the mud at all, because...
Right. Because we don't know.
There's no proof of any of this, right? Like, all we know is that he was the last person in Michigan who's known to have seen Jacob.
Right.
And he apparently did kind of go off the grid for a little while afterwards. But, like, again, I believe that he's pretty much stayed out of trouble, too. Like, he owns his own barbershop, you know? Like, he's just a normal dude from what it seems like.
Yeah, and we also have surveillance footage that shows that Jake was by himself.
Right. Or at least, you know, that nobody else got out of the car at any of these stops. Yeah. I mean, there's definitely no indication that he had anybody with him, Gary or, you know, anyone else.
Right.
And I've got to suspect as well that other people must have seen Gary that evening after Jake dropped him off. Right. Because, like, there has to have been some sort of corroboration.
Right. Otherwise, he would have been a person of interest.
Exactly.
If they couldn't have corroborated some level or some measure of his story.
Right. And so, you know, whether or not they corroborated that whole, like, partying in the hotel thing, I don't know. But I think I've got to think that, like, somebody would have seen him at that park that Jake dropped him off at. You know, like, there has to have been something.
Yeah.
Right. For him to just be able to not be named a person of interest or anything in this case. So, yeah, I don't know. We don't know enough about his life to know, you know, who else he could have been involved with, who might have been able to offer him money to do something like this.
Right.
But this idea does also work with why he wouldn't have said anything to anyone either.
That's true.
You know, like, it would have been too hard to, like, make up a story to explain this. He lived with his mom, so maybe that's why he also didn't want to go home and grab clothes, because she'd be asking questions. And
yeah, why are you packing? Where are you going?
Exactly. So maybe his idea was to just go do this, come back, and then figure out a story after. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. It's baffling. It's odd behavior regardless.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Seems very out of character.
It does, because, you know, there aren't any stories that his family has told about, like, other get rich quick schemes that he's had or anything like that.
Or,
you know,
that he would randomly leave the state or go on long road trips.
Yeah. So none of this really makes sense. But to them, neither does the idea that he just picked up and left and started a new life. Like, none of it makes sense, you know?
Yeah.
And there's just been no indication of him anywhere other than the car being found 7 years later, or at least the VIN number being found in records 7 years later. Because again, we don't have the physical car.
Mm.
Like, the physical car wasn't found. The VIN was just in some records for the scrapyard.
It's just so bizarre.
And, you know, it's 2010. He was a mechanic. I mean, he was a student, though. So I don't know if he had like a laptop or, you know, what kind of electronic trail. They obviously got into his cell phone records because yeah. That's how we have a good chunk of the timeline. But, you know, we've never gotten any more information about any other like electronic evidence there may have been or anything of that nature. It's just so many questions. And it's been 15 years. With almost no answers. As of this recording, the case remains open and active. The Grand Traverse County Sheriff's Office has been collaborating with the Western Michigan University Cold Case Program to analyze all the data in Jacob's case. 5 WMU Cold Case students have been helping by digitizing the case file, making timelines and maps of Jacob's travels, and reviewing phone records. The hope is that a fresh set of eyes and modern analytical tools might find something that everyone else missed. In March 2024, around the 14th anniversary of Jacob's disappearance, the Sheriff's Office put out renewed calls to the public for information. Even the FBI has highlighted Jacob's case on their VICAT missing persons site, urging anyone with tips to come forward. Over the years, Jacob's family has held out hope that they'll get answers one day. His son, Xander, told reporters, quote, "I think I'd rather know than not know, even if the answer isn't something I want to hear," end quote. In the meantime, Jacob's family keeps his memory alive. At the Hickory Hills Disc Golf Course, where he was last enjoying himself, Jacob's sons and relatives installed a memorial bench in his honor. When the bench was first placed, Jacob's boys wrote letters to him, attached them to balloons, and released them into the sky at the course. It was their way of saying goodbye, or perhaps just sending messages out into the universe, hoping he'd somehow receive them. Jacob Cavanaugh has been missing from Traverse City, Michigan since March 31st, 2010. He is a Native American man with brown hair and brown eyes. He was last seen wearing his work uniform, which is dark blue or gray work pants, a white or orange t-shirt, a gray jacket with Dave's Garage printed on it, and brown work boots. At the time of his disappearance, Jake was approximately 5'11 and 150 pounds. He was 31 when he went missing. He would be 46 today. If you have any information about the disappearance of Jacob Cavanaugh, please contact the Grand Traverse County Sheriff's Office at 231-995-5002 or submit an anonymous tip through their website. You can see all the sources for this episode along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram and TikTok. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by me, Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketsa. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!
There's nothing more satisfying than finding the perfect green paint for your living room. Except maybe popping open that can of Valspar Ultra and rolling that first smooth stroke on the wall. And there's nothing more satisfying than admiring your freshly painted wall.
Ooh.
Except maybe peeling off the painter's tape to see those crisp edges. But the most satisfying part of all? Valspar Ultra's price tag, starting at $29.98 a gallon. Affordable, durable, available at Lowe's. Price varies by sheen.